For over 6 years, Hank Thorpe hosted All of the Above Radio, the most intelligent, honest, and eclectic combo of music and talk that you never heard. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. Hank is back with a new version of the old scene. No more music, no more time constraints, but he still has great stories, great interviews, and more passion than a novel with Fabio on the cover. Once upon a time, Hank Thorpe was your bastion of good music, good talk, and full escapism. Now, Hank is your bastion for punchlines, passion, and perspective. Hank Thorpe, your former, present, and future favorite podcast host, presents all new, all different, but still, All of the Above.
As the phrase goes, what a difference a day makes. But sometimes the same day can mean a different thing, over and over again. Stay with me, I'll explain. Welcome to all new, all different, but still, all of the above. I will never say welcome back. One, because I don't do commercials anymore. That was the old show. And two, that would make obvious to the point that I go very long bouts of time without talking to all of you. And let me make abundantly clear how much I miss all of you and how much I miss this microphone that projects out to all of you. So here we are, chatting once again. My name is Hank. Hey, how you doing? You can find me, where can you find me? On facebook.com/alltheaboveradio. You could find me on my personal Facebook page, HANKTHORPE. Find me on Instagram, @HankToldYouSo. Or you could send me an email straight up to alltheaboveradio@gmail.com. It's been a while, guys. The last show that I did for you was before the NFL season began. There was a whole lot of hope for the team of my youth and the team of my life, the New York Football Giants. Looks a little different now. I won't say hope is lost, but I will say that the hope sits on the shoulders of a different quarterback. A different discussion for a different time. But as I am talking to you, I get to say a huge hearty congratulations to the Texas Rangers, who are 4 games away from winning their first World Series. It has been a very long time since the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex that I reside in has had a winner. The last time this area has had a winner was the Dallas Mavericks in 2011. The Dallas Stars have circled the drain or sniffed the tree, whatever it is you want to say, back in 2020. Couldn't quite get there. The Tampa Bay Lightning was quite the buzzsaw at that point. So it would be absolutely amazing for the city to have a winner again. It would be absolutely amazing for the baseball team to have a win, because they never have. And I would absolutely love to see my friends, for whom I know are baseball fans since childhood, baseball fans to the death, Rangers fans to the death, get that win. That would be really cool. I am a Rangers fan. I am happy to admit that. I converted to Texas Rangerdom in 2007, so I've been around for a while. Been there for everywhere in between Michael Young and Hank Blaylock and Neftali Feliz, all the way into the now. I was getting booed at my ex-girlfriend's town of residence in downtown Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I was getting booed during a brewery tour the year that Jose Bautista did the bat flip that hit the home run that did the bat flip that won the playoff game against the Rangers in the playoffs. I've been there for a lot of it. So it'd be really cool. That was not why I came here to chat with you guys today. I came here to chat with you about a really strange phenomena. And maybe it's not a strange phenomena. I think it's just the fact that I've been living for a while now. I will be in just under a month from the time I am talking to you. I will be 45 years old. And so I've been around for a while and done lots of things and been lots of places. I had this thought just a couple of weeks ago. Have you lived long enough that certain milestones have happened all on the same day? Certain happenings have come to you all on the same day. And if you can think of it, cool. If you can't, I'm going to give you a little bit of a jumping off point. So I want to talk to you about the date September 11th. So we already know how this is significant to anybody who has been born. Basically, the September 11th, 2001 is the millennial and Gen Z version of what the boomers went through with JFK. For those of you who are not familiar with all of these concepts, just stay with me. So my mom and my grandma, I actually had to do a college assignment for my American government class, where I had to interview somebody who was alive during X amount of things. And my mother can recall still to this day where she was when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Probably about 27 minutes from where I'm sitting. Downtown Dallas, Dealey Plaza, blah, 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 blah. But for Generation X, which is me, millennials, my wife, and anybody coming up after that, can tell you where they were for September 11th, 2001. And I've told the story before, so I'll give you the short version. The night before was Monday Night Football. My beloved New York Football Giants got shellacked by the Denver Broncos. And I wanted to just sit and watch the game by myself and grill some burgers out, but I got in an argument with my then girlfriend. And so she walked off in a huff. I got to watch a bad football game. And I would say I got to watch it peacefully, but of course there was the specter of her being annoyed with me as she left. And I went to bed with ESPN on, and I woke up the next morning, and I hear the news in my sleep. I hear the news in my dream. And I woke up, and I flipped the TV thinking, oh, I must have accidentally changed the channel. What the hell is this? This is supposed to be ESPN. But ESPN, much like everybody else, had broken into news coverage of the Twin Towers coming down. And I try to go back to sleep. I'm trying to ignore the news. I'm not hearing what's actually happening. And my roommate at the time, Heidi Van Munster, busts in the door. She says, are you watching this? I said, am I watching what? And I start watching the screens and I say, whoa. And I was a junior at Eastern Michigan University at the time, and nobody really knew what to do. So I walked to class, and my professor was a guy who had been around for JFK. His parents had been around for World War II, his grandparents for World War I. So he was he had a grasp on just how serious the situation was. Me at 21 years old, I could grasp it, but I couldn't. So he said, the short version is, he said, "I can't even teach today, guys. Just go. And kind of throughout the day, we realized school has now been closed. Nobody can teach. Nobody is in a right mental state. And like I said, I was 21 years old, or 22, about to be 22, when all of this was happening. So I was watching in live time how all of this unfolded, how changes to the airport. Once again, baby boomers can tell you what it was like to be on an airplane that had a smoking section. I can't. But I can tell you what it was like once upon a time when you could walk all the way up to the gate at the airport to hug your nieces and nephews as soon as they got off the plane. That scene in the movie Dogma where Loki and Bartleby are watching people show love to each other as they get off the plane. That's a movie from 1999. That don't happen anymore. Or yet another airport thing to think about was the 5 or 6 months where there was armed off-duty, or where there was armed members of the United States Army standing guard at TSA X-ray. All of the different changes that happened because of September 11th, 2001. I got to see it all in live time. And when I flew back from Michigan to New Jersey in 2001 for Thanksgiving, I have never seen so many people flood to the windows to look out the window to see if they could see where the Twin Towers were supposed to be, where Ground Zero was. Spoiler alert, all you could see was just smoke and fog and clouds. You couldn't really see anything. Not from our flight in, at least. And people who were born, we'll just say the Gen Z crowd, who was born far into 2000, 2001, and after, they will never know anything different. Much like my quote-unquote millennial wife and I. She was born in 1989, so she's on the age cutoff. She is not a millennial. She goes to work, and she works hard, by the way. But for this conversation, she is in the millennial bracket. She and I have that transition to where you had dial-up internet, or you had to tell somebody to get off the phone so that you could send an email. The Google was not an instantaneous thing. Information was not an instantaneous thing. And people that are Gen Z and however much, whatever other names you want to throw at it, they will not fully understand all of the influences that September 11th, 2001 had, because they will only ever know that world. They will only ever know post 2001, September 11th. But here's where the phenomena kicks in that I was telling you about, where one day can actually mean more than one thing. So yes, September 11th has significance in my personal history as an American, but it also has personal history for me in that on September 11th, 2013, was opening day for the restaurant that I work at. So, I don't know that I've ever told this story. I used to work at a Mexican joint, not terribly far from where I live. I had been there, I got there March 1st of 2008 was my first day out of training. And it was a job that I took based on I didn't think I could get a job anywhere else. I had just come off of being fired. I had just come off of having to turn myself in to jail for serving a minor. I was deathly afraid that I wasn't going to be able to get a job anywhere because I was afraid I was going to have to tell the truth in an interview of what I did. And so I called up one of my buddies who already worked there, and she said, "Yep, I'll get you in." And she got my foot in the door, and I fudged my way through an interview, and I got a job at this Mexican joint. And in the late spring of 2013, had a really, really bad shift. I worked a double that day, and there was some super entitled people who acted super entitled, and I tried to call them out on it as respectfully as I could, but I probably, if I were to look back and watch the interaction, I would probably say, oh, yeah, that bartender needed to be disciplined. And so my boss that day pulled me aside and told me that they were offended by their experience and that I had to do better. Okay, great. But it was one of those moments where I was so frustrated that entitled people got to continue to be entitled and got no repercussions, where I got the repercussions. And that night, I'm sitting at my computer. I was a single man at the time, so probably far too late into the night. And I saw this article that a guy named Jimmy Cannon, along with two other people, was opening a restaurant. And I said, Jimmy Cannon? He's a regular where I work. I know that guy. So I looked up where it was going to be and just kept my eyes on it. And found it. Found the name of the place. Found the application and applied the same night. I made sure to put Jimmy's name on the application. I got a call a couple weeks later. Lovely, lovely woman named Sarah calls me up and says, Jimmy loves you. That means we love you. You don't need to interview. Whenever you're hired. I said, great. And so we start training. It's a pizza and beer joint. Okay, that sounds great. So, it's a pizza and beer joint that sells artisan pizza, 23 beers on tap, and it was really funny. This is 2013. I am primarily a drinker of Dunkels and Porters and stouts. So there was one of the training days where we stood at the left side of the beer taps and said, okay guys, you're gonna taste everything 1 to 23. And so predictably a whole bunch of people are walking around buzzed for the next hour and change of training. But I remember that day so vividly because I had to taste IPAs. At the time, I hated IPAs. I had no interest in them whatsoever. And of course, hazy New England IPAs didn't exist yet. So here I am tasting West Coast IPAs from Odell Brewing in Colorado, I can see them like that was yesterday. Jeez, nothing Lagunitas, but you get the idea. Stuff from California, stuff from Washington, stuff from Oregon, stuff from Colorado, because Texas wasn't on the local brew scene just yet. Petacolis was there. Rahr and Sons was there. Franconia was there. Lakewood was there, but it wasn't what it is now. And I taste a West Coast IPA, pucker my face like I'm a 6-year-old eating a lemon accidentally thinking it was an orange and just annoyed with life. So fast forward a little bit. I worked there 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday mornings, as I was still working for the Mexican joint. And I proceeded to do that for a while. The pizza and beer joint was nice enough to let me leave for 2 months in 2014 so that I could go help open up yet another Mexican joint in Pennsylvania, and then nice enough to give me shifts when I came back. I mean, you're only working 3 days a week. What do they care? And then in 2015, I went full-time with them. So I have seen a lot in the years I have been there. A lot of management, a lot of food changes, a lot of alcohol changes, a lot of trends in food and alcohol have changed. The people have, in some way or another, remained the same. When you work at a neighborhood bar, you see the same people on a daily basis. And for some of them, time looks exactly the same. For somebody who was 62 the first day you saw them, they probably don't look a whole heck of a lot different, especially when you see them 5 to 6 days a week. But I'll tell you this, and this actually just happened a few short days ago. A kid came in. I was making drinks at the service well. A kid walked in. He says, "Hank?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "I'm Jason's son." And I got to take a look at this kid who's got this little dirt above his lip mustache and long hair like a young punk tends to do, and understand that this is a kid that I have seen since Saturday mornings in September of 2013. This 6-year-old, this then 6-year-old who was playing Little League Baseball is now right on the verge of picking what college he wants to play baseball at. And it's crazy. So here's the cat's out of the bag moment. Just a few weeks ago was September 11th, 2023. I have now been at that restaurant for 10 years. I kind of forgot to mention that part. I started to veer off the point and yet color within what I'm telling you about. So in that 10 years, I have been and seen and done a ton of things. I have been able to travel to Mexico thanks to the company selecting me. The company was nice enough to give me and my wife a gift card for our wedding day. It's been, more often than not, it has been a very good experience in these last 10 years. So I walked into work on September 11th, 2023, just a few short weeks ago, and I knew the anniversary was coming up, but I didn't know the exact day. And my boss said to me, "Oh, it's kind of creepy that the 10-year anniversary of this place is on September 11th. And I was like, "You know what? Yeah, but no." As horrid as that day was, as tidal wave changing as that day was for America, it's my 10-year anniversary. I've never worked anywhere this long. I'm not going to say it's good all the time, and I'm not going to say there wasn't a couple of different spans where I was ready to leave. Which, by the way, is why I went to massage school, because there was one point I thought I wanted to leave. But then I proposed to my now wife and realized how expensive weddings are, and that massage will not pay it. Okay, that's that's a really funny thing to say that is only partially true. the management got a lot better, the staff around me got a lot better, and my perspective on life got a lot better. And that's why I chose to stay and not become a full-time massage therapist. It's a great joke to say that weddings are expensive and bartending pays better. And it's not wrong, but is mostly a really funny joke. So I can sit here and tell you that September 11th means two very important things to me. So now that I have given you the groundwork, I'm going to have you on one side of your brain, whichever side you work well with. Whatever side of your, if you're left brained or right brained, whichever side is the listening side, keep that one engaged because this show is not over. But with the other side of your brain, please do just think about what day has been something significant to you over and over again. I got another example for you. So, October 7th. Maybe it's just a random day to you, but it means three things to me. So first and foremost, it is the birthday of one of my absolute closest friends. Named Jeff that I have known since the summer of sixth grade. I actually played against Jeff in baseball before that. Had no idea who the kid was. But then my buddy Dorian, for whom his mom and my mom taught at the same high school, I'm seeing this more and more now that I'm an adult. When you're an adult and you're a coworker and you want to have a work happy hour, but you can't get a sitter for your kids, you schedule a play date. So suddenly you and your friend who work in the mailroom together, or who are the administrative assistants together, or are bartenders together, you want to get together and hang out with this person, but you can't get a sitter for your kids. So, how old is your son again? He's six. You know what? My son is five. Does your kid like Minecraft? Oh, yeah, he loves that crap. I can't get him off the screen. All right, we're going to get them together. So that's how I met Dorian. My mom and Mrs. F, they wanted to hang out, so I am now hanging out in the same room with Dorian and his brother Mark. And through Dorian, I meet Jeff. So Jeff is, for all of you listening, everybody has that friend that is the spark plug. When you put them in the room, whether they be male or female, the room is just a little louder because of them. People are a little more energetic because of them. For better, for worse. Sometimes it's a good idea, sometimes it's a bad idea. But Jeff is the spark plug. He's one of those people that you put him in the room, people are gonna have one extra beer, they're gonna play one extra round of cornhole. When the giant Jenga falls, people are going to shout just a little bit louder because of him. And he's one of the birthdays that I remember because he's a super close friend. And by the way, he is also the spark plug in that if there is something he wants to do, he's going to coerce you into doing it, whether you wanted to do it or not. Perfect example. We took a guy's trip. That was, by the way, his idea. We took a guy's trip in 2015 to New Orleans. I leaned towards New Orleans just because it was a cheap flight for me, but he was the spark plug of the trip itself. And so it's Friday afternoon, and we're walking back into our hotel, and they have and much like some hotels have the brochures on the wall, there was a person at a table setting up tours. And so Jeff sees that they're doing an alligator boat tour. He says, "Guys, this is a good idea. We need to do this." And me, ever the man to ask questions, I said, "What time is it?" He said, "Well, the tour is at 8. You got to be on the boat at 6. You got to be on the bus at 6 to take the tour at 8." Which, okay, that's wrong. We had to be on the bus at 8 to take the tour at 10, I think it was, but we had to be up at 6. Anyway, it was far too early for my taste. But there was 7 of us on the trip, and 6 people said yes. I wasn't going to be the guy to say, man, I'm not going. Because then you're the party pooper on the group. Can't do that. And you know what? I got funny video of an alligator doing a dolphin style back swim while eating a hot dog. So you know what? Everybody wins in some way or another. But October 7th is Jeff's birthday. Easy enough. It's not like we did anything big or crazy or whatever, but he's close enough in my life that I remember his birthday. And I can tell you the birthday of a fair amount of my closest friends. Actually, I can tell you the birthday of all 8 of my groomsmen and groomswomen, and I can tell you his birthday. So Jeff was not a groomsman, but he was the wrangler and coordinator of the shuttles on the wedding day. Because we did an out-of-town wedding and people were staying at a hotel, we had 5 shuttles getting people to and from the wedding venue because we wanted everybody to drink. And I put Jeff in charge of standing at the hotel and wrangling people in. And you did a phenomenal job of it, by the way. So simple enough, October 7th is my buddy Jeff's birthday. Easy to remember. One of my closest friends. I remember all my close friends' birthdays. Don't ask me about my nieces and nephews. I apologize. I have too many of them. I apologize. Of course, you could say, gee, Hank, you've got 8 groomsmen and groomswomen. Well, you remember their birthdays. I'm going to tell you to shut up and just keep on listening. Thank you. So October 7th has yet another meaning to me. Another milestone. It is also the day I lost my father. Once again, this is probably stories I've told you in some way, shape, or form. I was, I'm a junior at Eastern Michigan University. Hold on. Wait, so September 11, 2001. Okay, so for September 11, 2001, I was a senior at Eastern Michigan University. Okay, let's just clear that up. I graduated in 02. Okay, so now here I am. I'm a junior at Eastern Michigan. It is October 7th, 2000. I am in bed still. I'm in bed about an hour and change away from working a shift at Foot Locker. I worked at Foot Locker on the weekends because I wanted to work. Back then, when I was a student in college, I needed to work, or at least I thought I did, so I had less spare time so that I wouldn't F around so much and get homework done. That was my thought at the time. Whatever. And so I get awakened to a phone call from my brother. He says, Dad's in the hospital. It's not looking good. We're going to New Jersey. I said, okay. And then he said some kind of random things that I didn't understand at the time, talking about us as men and our last name. And looking back on it, he was warning me that we may not make it. So this is October of 2000. This is the moment I am in right now with you. So I get off the phone with my brother. I call my boss, Eric Donders at Foot Locker, and I say, hey man, my brother just called and told me that my dad's in the hospital. I can't work today. I'm getting on a plane to New Jersey. I said, okay. So it was probably more colorful than that. He was a former collegiate an Olympic wrestler. He was a very colorful man. It was probably more colorful than, and yet still reasonably respectful and heartfelt. So my brother picks me up. We get on a plane. We get to Newton Memorial Hospital. He's on life support, but he's not gone yet. It was shortly after. Mom had already been there. And my sister didn't make it. Her and her husband their flight, they got it, they had issues with their flight, they couldn't make it in time. Does it make a difference that he was, does it make a difference that it was still, that the machines were still beeping when I got there and the machines had not been beeping when my sister got there? Kinda not really. Honestly, kinda not really. And you hear the stories as life moves on, as people that are older than you start to think you can handle it, can comprehend it. Just a few months ago, actually, I was sitting at a lunch table with my mom and my sister, and my brother-in-law was nearby. I don't remember if he was at the table at that point. But my sister proceeded to tell me more of the story. And the nurses, the nurses called my sister, for whom lived in Arlington, Texas at the time. And they were telling her that my sister needed to help console mom and keep her distracted, because they knew that dad wasn't going to make it. They knew that whatever happened to him at that hospital in 2000 was not fixable. So they were telling my sister to keep my mom calm and preparing her for the fact that my sister was very probably not going to make her flight before it happened. So this is all things I hear later on. This is all stuff I heard just months ago. And so, obviously, I am now back in New Jersey. Dad has passed. We come back home to the house that I grew up in, that mom and dad were just sleeping in just a few hours ago. Predictably enough, I don't know if you have had to do this yet. So everybody is in a different stage of life. I don't know if you've had to make these calls yet. And Facebook didn't exist. No, Facebook did not exist in 2000, and MySpace wasn't even a thing. Because now, you can get on Instagram, you can get on Twitter, you can get on TikTok, you can get on Facebook, and you can put up pictures. You can tell very long posts of on at 11 a.m. on October 7th, a new angel entered heaven, or whatever, however you want to specify it. You can just do the big public blast of news. Then it was, okay, who do I need to call? So you start calling people that, you know, that live in New Jersey. Then you start calling people that live other places but grew up with you, new dad, so on and so on and so on. And some people I specifically saved for a person-to-person interaction. One of them was one of my groomsmen, because I knew a phone call was not going to be enough for me or for him. And I remember just collapsing on his shoulder. I couldn't even get the words out when I told him. But I needed that. He was one of my most sensitive friends. I knew he would handle that moment appropriately. And I also knew that however many people I stayed calm with when I told them, I also knew I probably needed to explode a little bit. And I gotta tell you, that week was really good. The people that did live in New Jersey that were friends with me all through high school or elementary school or whatever, they were able to take off a good amount of time and spend with me during the memorial, at dinners after, and all of that. It was really good to have that time and then, you know, fly back to Ypsilanti, Michigan and be a student in college again. So obviously, October 7th has a big day of significance for that reason. It's the day I lost my dad. And I could sit here and get into the effects that happened afterwards. And I will tell you this. I know for a fact, the first relationship I was in, that same girl in 2001 I got in an argument with, I was desperately trying to restore the family unit that I had just lost. And so I tried real hard to make that relationship work. It wasn't gonna work. And by the way, she's got two kids, great husband. Her pictures on Facebook are awesome. I am so proud of her. And I will tell you this. I have occasionally said, I don't know that I've ever said it to my brother, but my brother is 15 years older than me. And I am occasionally jealous of the time he got, because every man that is listening to this right now, you get to have that moment along with me where you say, oh yeah, I wasn't ready. I can admit to you, I can admit to you that at age 20, 21, when Dad was still alive, I wasn't ready for all of his wisdom. I was still in the you can't tell me nothing phase of life. And I remember Mom told me, it was the Thursday before he died, I was having some issues with my sweet mate. It was two rooms, but we shared a bathroom, and the guy was kind of a dick. Mom said, why don't you call your dad? Maybe he'll have some advice for you. I don't know why I didn't call. I'm sure I had the thought of, maybe, I don't know. But if you want to play the game of regrets, I do regret not calling Dad on Thursday, knowing that he was going to be gone on Saturday. And I wasn't old enough to be ready for whatever wisdom he would have given. Now, he got married when he was 18, so there's probably a lot of things he missed out on, and a lot of things we would have been learning together because he didn't experience it, and I was experiencing it for the first time. But I still do get a little jealous of my brother for having more time with him, because my brother got to talk to my dad as a parent. Like, hey, my daughter does this. My job has this. Those are things that I would have loved. I won't even lie about that. Now, you meet people along the way that carry a similar energetic pattern. You meet people along the way that had a similar way of growing up. So you meet people that have little pieces of what people may have given you that are now past. Every now and then, I don't have any specific examples, but every now and then, somebody says something that my father may have said. Or just every now and then, I remember something my father did say. Because even me at 19 years old was still listening. I might have been immediately angry after he said it. But, you know, the things I did get to learn, some of them have stuck. And as a side note, this is not really related to my dad, but I will never regret getting married at age 43, knowing that at age 22, 23, I was trying so hard to make things work because I was so sad that I lost my dad and just wanted to try to piece a family back together. I am truly glad that I let myself marinate as a human. And I am not great. I'm decent. I am sure as hell not great, but I am better now than I would have ever been to myself or to the person I am with. So that's two things that happen on October 7th. there's now a third. So, this is a story that recently happened, actually. It's Friday night, October... Well, okay. So Friday night, October 6th, I'm working. I get finished up just after midnight. And I get home just a couple minutes after 1. So it's a couple minutes after 1, so now it's officially Friday, October 7th. And I've got a busy weekend ahead, helping my wife, for whom is a bridesmaid, get set up for her best friend's wedding. Little did I know, my busy weekend was just about to start. So I get a text from one of my coworkers, and she says, "Hey, my roommate fell. I think she needs to go to the hospital." So as I'm reading this text message, that same person, my coworker, calls me and says, "Hey, I don't know if you saw my text, but my roommate fell and she said to call you." And I said, I'll put on some pants. I'm on my way. So I have to unpack a few things real quick. So my coworker is the roommate of a very good friend. So it is a married couple for whom I am friends with. If you want to get technical, her husband was in my wedding, but her husband was traveling with their daughter. He is in New Mexico with no cell service. So this woman has, she took a bad fall. She was painting. She took a bad fall. And her roommate, my coworker, answered a text, got home, and saw her laying on the ground. And thus begins this very long process of a very long night. So I put on some pants, I get to their house, and my coworker meets me downstairs and says, "Hey, she's upstairs. Let's go." I said, "Okay." So I get up there, and there's my friend laying on the ground, holding her head, talking about how much it hurts. I said, "Okay, are you ready to go to the hospital?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Okay." So we slowly pick her up. We get her down the stairs. And my coworker has done a phenomenal job putting a bag together, getting her wallet, her purse, all the things that this woman may need because her husband is traveling. So we are now officially her emergency contacts. So we get this woman into the back of my car. We get her to the hospital of her preferred choice, of her preference. And we're driving to the hospital. And so at this point, I don't know what happened. I just know a text message that this woman fell and that she, in some moment of clarity, told her roommate to call me. So we are now driving to the hospital. And there was a moment where she's in the back, she's talking about how much her head hurts, and then she goes quiet. And I told my coworker, "Hey, make sure she stays awake." Because at that point, you have no idea what happened. And all I remember is, may he rest in peace, Bob Saget apparently slipped and fell and hit his head, and then went to sleep later that day and never woke up again. I believe that's how the story goes. And so we get to the hospital. So somebody meets us there, puts her in a wheelchair and starts to wheel her in and gets her all ready for observation and all that. And first and foremost, I could not have done it if it wasn't for my coworker/her roommate. she handled the paperwork in the moments where she had to get dressed into a gown, the moments where nudity happened. I just had to tag out, obviously, out of respect. Now, in a world where I was the only person there, yeah, sure, I'm going to do the changing room look-away situation, but thankfully, I didn't have to. I didn't have to answer questions about a dress or insurance or this or that. It was beautiful in that way, that those are things I didn't have to do. And so, we finally get a dot. We get nurses talking to her, trying to figure out what's going on. And she's trying, this woman is now laying in the hospital bed, trying to kind of recall the story, recall anything she can remember. I was painting, I slipped, I fell, I hit my head. No, I have no idea what time it was. I don't remember. It's really bright. I'm really cold. These are all things that were happening. Where's my daughter? Is she okay? Just in these moments where a nurse is trying to get questions out of you, as you're watching morphine get pumped into the arm of this person that you care about, it's all happening really fast and all happening really slow at the same time. And like I said, at this point, we don't know anything. We just know that the two people that are now trying to take care of her that aren't certified to do so, my coworker and me, we were at work. So we have no idea how long ago she fell, anything. We just know that she keeps her hand on one spot on her head because that's where it hurts. So obviously, that's where she fell. Let's just start with that. And so there's this 100 miles an hour hurry up and wait when you're trying to call a daughter who is may or may not be awake, trying to call a husband who may or may not have cell reception, just trying to figure out any way to get to him, find him on Facebook Messenger, text him, call him, just anything. Meanwhile, you're now kind of listening to the doctor as he talks to say, okay, set up a CT scan. We need to see if there's bleeding on the brain. We need to see if there's a skull fracture. We need to check everything because we don't know anything. And I got to tell you, I'm going to fast forward for you so that I can kind of color in the rest of the lines. So as it turns out, we were somewhat lucky that it was a very bad concussion. No bleeding on the brain, no internal damage, no skull crack, no nothing like that. It was, not making light of it, but it was, best case scenario, a bad concussion. Now, as a fan of the NFL, you watch the Tua Tagovailoas of the world get hit, stand up, and walk around like an 11-month-old baby who can't stay upright. Or you see a wildly drunk person can't walk a straight line and ends up plopping on the ground. It was somewhere in between the concept of that. I've watched football for most of my life and seen concussions happen, but never that close. And there is this really unnerving moment for me, the person witnessing it. A person who knows me, a person who we have shared a dinner table together, we have shared laughs, we've shared together. A person that I've known for years could look at me with the eyes of, who are you? She knew who I was, but you could tell somewhere in there was just kind of a, what are we doing here? Why are you here? What's going on? And she was kind of floating in between moments of absolute clarity, making jokes about her husband, making cracks about her daughter, not answering the phone. And other moments where she was genuinely worried about her youngest daughter or really scared. Really. And I can't even imagine the pain she was in. She actually, in the midst of one of her lucid moments, cracked a joke and she said, the nurse says, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your pain level right now? And this woman laying on the hospital bed says, I gave birth to a 10-pound baby. I can handle a lot, but it's an 8. Women out there are laughing at this right now. Or parents, just in general. But it was so, I won't even use any other word, scary to sit and hold this woman's hand as she kind of traveled in and out of lucid and in and out of scared. Because let's face it, her husband wasn't there, her youngest or oldest daughter wasn't there. She's in a hospital bed with people that care about her, but there's probably people that she would have preferred be there first. And let's just face it, you're laying in a hospital bed, you don't want to be there. Just being there in general makes you scared. I mean, I remember when I went headfirst into a tree snowboarding. I was in Otsego, Michigan, and my mother was in New Jersey. And my then-girlfriend was in Ypsilanti, Michigan, 4 hours away. And I just remember thinking, I'm cold, I'm freaking out, I have no idea what's, I have no idea what's next. And by the time, I think it was maybe about 4:15, 4:30 rolled around, we had been able to get connected to her husband. So I was able to talk to him. He was able to talk to the doctor, and then he was able to talk to her on her hospital bed. And that's when she finally said, I want to go home. I'm okay. I'm ready to go home. And I got to tell you, the night and day difference from when I showed up to her house at 1:25 or so to 4:25 to 5:15 or whatever, there was genuinely a night and day difference when enough morphine had lessened the pain and some of her clarity started to come back. There was a night and day difference. But I gotta tell you, as you're holding somebody's hand, as their body and mind and brain are adjusting to the fall they took, as you're kind of watching them in live time, kind of looking into their eyes as they are processing what's going on. Some scary stuff, man. And the beauty is the weeks have gone by and there's already jokes being cracked about it. There's already, because there were no skulls cracked about it, I suppose. There's been jokes made about it. There's been thank yous said about it. And we are, in some way or another, reasonably proceeding on. But that night brought me closer in some way to my coworker, who is the roommate of the person who fell. Because there were, while she was asleep, while she was resting, I asked the nurses, hey, is it okay for her to sleep? Because once again, I thought about Bob Saget. And they said, yep, it's absolutely fine. She needs the rest. So there were moments while she was asleep where my coworker and I were talking, and I will never trade that. It's not the scenario that I would have loved to have a conversation with her, but it was a really nice conversation. I mean, there's not a lot else you can do when you were kind of whisked away from your plans and from your day to be there. And I don't know how the person who fell feels about all of this, but I will say that I am happy with and proud of how I was able to help. Because listen, I am not particularly handy with a tool set. I haven't changed a tire in probably 15 years. Don't ask me to save the family dog from a bobcat. And the best I could probably do if I'm in a fight is hold somebody off long enough that you go get help. I'll probably save you from whomever was trying to attack you, but then I'm probably going to get my ass kicked in the process. But if there's one thing I can do, is be comforting to somebody. If there's one thing I know I can do, I can hold your hand and tell you to breathe as you're in pain. I can keep you distracted while you're nervously thinking about what's next, or how cold you are, or how much it hurts, or where your husband is. I can do those. And I was glad that I was able to do that for her. So not only is October 7th my buddy Jeff's birthday, not only is October 7th the day that I lost my father, but it was the day that I needed to take a friend into the hospital, and thankfully, best case scenario, a nasty concussion. I started for those of you who have been listening to either All of the Above Radio or All New, All Different, All of the Above for long enough, you know that at any given point in my life, in my day, there is content happening. There is content all around us. Some of it is just to write in a journal, just for you and your eventual psychologist to unpack. But everything else that happens throughout the course of the day will end up being material. And pretty much as I was driving home from dropping her off and making sure she safely fell asleep on the couch, I started thinking, wow, October 7th, this is a day that a lot of crap has happened to me. How do I get to talk to all of you about it? So I ask you once again, is there a day in your life, have you been on this planet long enough that the same day has meant multiple things to you? And I'm sure, I hate to say it, but I spend a lot of time on Reddit now. If I were to go into Ask Reddit or No Stupid Questions, this has possibly been a discussion topic. And I'm just realizing that I should probably get on Reddit here and there to look for more show content when I don't have any to bring you. But I bring it to you. What day has meant multiple things to you? I look forward to hearing from you. Some of you will be talking to me in person about it because you know me that well. For everybody else, alloftheaboveradio@gmail.com. I can't wait to hear your responses. It was good to talk to you guys. And the next time I chat with you, I say this all the time, hopefully it won't be so few and far in between. It's my own fault because I want to have the perfect scenario whenever I talk to you. I want my wife to be hanging out with the gals or at work so that it's just me in the house. And I want to have nothing else to do. I want to not have anything in the kitchen I need to be working on, unless I'm going to do a domestic episode. I've done those. I want to have no laundry I need to put away, no work I have to go to. I need a perfect scenario to be able to feel comfortable sitting down and doing this recording for you. I love doing it. But the busier I get, the more I struggle to find the time. So I'm glad I found the time to talk to you guys today. I just hope you're still willing to listen. So we will do this again soon. And soon after that. And soon after that. And soon after that. My name is Hank. This has been all new, all different, all of the above. May there be a next time. I say till next time. Go Rangers.